This is going to be good. All right. So today we are talking about how to create a masterclass, a mastermind, a challenge, all those things. However, the three of us have been chatting for almost a half an hour already on how, that's okay. Unless somebody has to be somewhere, on how to upload your first ebook or turn a book into a paperback or hardback or whatever, on how to self-publish basically. And so we've talked all about all kinds of goodies, and we do have another lane in my academy, and it is how to write. And so jump over there and join in, because we'll have all of that information over there as well. However, for today, we were talking about why we want to have these ebooks. And Mason had just described that he had created a PDF because it's something that he's created just in his computer that he saved that he can send out and connect with people. However, I want to appeal to Mason to possibly look at putting together an ebook or something that if you have enough pages, and that's what our conversation was about today, is that publishing such as Kindle, KDP on Amazon, which is the Kindle, or Draft to Digital, which is a platform that Mason's been using, which I'm going to check out. They do have a minimum requirement of how many pages you have to upload in order for it to be a paperback where somebody can physically order that book and hold it in their hand. And it's not just a digital book. And so I want to appeal to Mason to create something that is large enough to be a paperback. And this, and one of the things we talked about in having your challenge, your masterclass or whatever, was how do you get folks to attend? This is a perfect way to do two things. Number one, when you publish something, you want to get sales. And once somebody purchases it, even if it's for 99 cents, once they purchase whatever book it is that you've written, once they purchase it off of one of those sites, then they can go in and review you. They can review the book. And oftentimes, Barnes & Noble and Amazon will not let somebody actually do a review if they haven't physically purchased at least a digital copy of that book. And so what I saw another guru do, and it was genius, he put across his social media, here is my book for 99 cents. Purchase the book. Now listen how genius this is. Purchase the book, give me a review, and if you email me proof, meaning just a screenshot of their review or whatever, it's your free ticket into the mastermind.
Nice.
And look what he did there. He increased his visibility. He sold a few copies, but I'm sure 99 cents wasn't going to make or break the bank for him. But it got him some exposure. It got him some reviews out there on these sites, and it built up his mastermind membership because those folks felt like they were getting something of value. Now, you can do it with an ebook, but I think a lot of folks, they don't find as much value in an ebook yet. Now, maybe it's going to go to that 100%, you know, we all, you know, but even Debbie, even you and I, when we get an ebook, the first thing we do is we print it off, put holes in it, and put it in a notebook because we don't want to lose it down the road. We're still in that mindset that we want something we can hold on to. And the different programs that I've purchased over the years, the different how-tos, I do that. I print them off. I put them in a notebook. I punch holes, put them in a binder, and put them on the top of my bookcase. And I've got all of these notebooks and they're all labeled. And I can go at any time and go back and review, because how many times do we sit down to a computer and we're like, oh gosh, I don't even remember that URL. I don't know even where to go to find that these days. And you wrote it down somewhere, but now you don't remember where you wrote it down. And so oftentimes we want some sort of a physical copy. So, so I encourage you, Mason, to do something, not necessarily that same PDF, but to do
that's
something.
That's what I was about to ask you.
Yeah, do something that you can actually have enough pages that they can get a paperback, at least, of that, if they want. Now, they may choose to just get the ebook to say, hey, I just went into the mastermind. But that is a great ticket into your mastermind or into your masterclass or challenge or whatever it is that you decide to do. Now, for those that are going to listen to this later, just know that we're using the 5-day challenge, and the 5 sessions is important, because once folks are with you for 5 times, they don't want it to end, because they start to build relationships. And that's why folks keep tapping in after they've been on board with you for at least 5 times. So 5 is the magic number. If you're going to do something, I like the masterclass, where you're just doing one big masterclass, but sometimes, you know, you get a lot of information and a lot of goodies out of a masterclass, but I don't think you have enough time to build relationship there. And so that's why I like the 5 sessions myself. So you could do a 5-session masterclass, a 5-session mastermind, a 5-day challenge, anything that goes 5 different times. And we talked about how to schedule those. We talked about what platform to put it on. We talked about how to price it. And today, before I turn it over for Debbie to facilitate our day's session, I want to talk a little bit about, where do you put the replays? Because that's what you can upcharge on a VIP, is your replays. And so I personally like to do mine just like this on a Zoom call. I like to record it. And then Zoom records it for me. They capture the recording. And then once I end the Zoom call, it will actually spool, if you will, into that recording. And Zoom automatically gives me an audio video version and an audio only version. It does it automatically. So then now I've got a conundrum. Where am I going to save this stuff, you know, now that it's there? Now, number one, you can just pay for storage and save it on Zoom. But because I'm starting to, you know, spend money on this platform and that platform, I thought, oh, I don't want yet another platform or yet another, you know, cloud storage that I'm paying for. And plus, you wouldn't necessarily send folks over to your Zoom to listen to it. So I thought, where can I save these recordings? Well, the first thing to think about is you can save them right on your computer. You can just download the recording and save it right on your computer. So now you've got the links. Well, again, if you're doing these on a regular basis, I'm doing 3 or 4 a week, and I am now in like year number 5, and a video takes a lot of space, memory space. So all of a sudden, I would have to start buying, you know, external hard drives or, you know, to save all of the stuff. So I said, no, it's more logical to save it in a cloud somewhere. But what cloud do I want to save it in? And I didn't want to spend a lot of money saving it all over the place. So I thought, I just need to pick something. So what I decided to do is I did a little Google search on, and again, Google term is whatever search engine you're using, but I did a little search and said, what's the difference between Vimeo and YouTube? And so what I discovered is both hold your video. Both, you can put a little description. Both are a search engine that people can find it. Both of them, you can either have it public or private, however you want to, unlisted, however you want to do it. But what I discovered on Vimeo is at the end of the video, when your person is listening, they click the link and they watch your video, it throws them out at the end into another one of your videos. If they're on YouTube and it's public and they watch the video, again, these are search engines, Vimeo and YouTube. They don't want people to leave their platform. So on YouTube, when you get to the end of the video, it throws you out to whatever they're interested in. Well, if they're interested in boxing, you know, they might watch your wonderful video and all of a sudden there's a boxing video on right after yours ends. And so if that's something that they normally click into that they like, I love Dancing with the Stars. Mark and I met dancing. So I love all those dance videos. I love, you know, America's Got Talent. I love watching the kids come out and they've got this, they look like they're 4 and then they sound like they're 45 when they sing. And I love those. And so every time I'm watching any type of an instructional video, it bumps me out into a dance video or a singing video at the other end. And of course, if I'm starting to get a little brain fried on my, you know, on my how-to video, I'm like, oh, let's just watch this for it. Next thing you know, I'm watching dance videos. And so anyway, that's YouTube's marketing. See, they want to keep you on their platform. So they throw in front of you all the stuff that you love to keep you on their platform. But as a creator, what it does is it takes the viewer away from where we're wanting them to stay for a minute, which is our products. So I decided I was going to choose Vimeo. So I went with Vimeo. And so the first thing that I did is every time I would finish a video and it would finish its spooling, I would then take the link and I would upload it into Vimeo. Now, once you upload it into Vimeo, now you get the decision. Do I want to make it public or do I want to make it unlisted or private? And so if it's again, we've talked in the Build a Better Business about our sales funnel, how we want to attract a ton of people here at the top. And then as they start to get to know, like, and trust us, you can start introducing more products and services that have a little bit higher price point. So as they come down that funnel, they'll pay more for your products and services. So you can use videos, the Zoom videos, two different ways. If it's a free meetup like the one we're on today, this is one that I want to attract all kinds of folks to come and hear what we have to say, to see if they're going to know, like, and trust us to tap in long term and maybe decide to spend some money on us later. And so for that video, I'm going to make it public. Because once I record this, I'm going to go public with it, because I want folks to find us and go, this is kind of interesting. I listened to them talk the other day, and yeah, I think I want to learn more. Now, if this is one of my masterminds that I'm charging for, a masterclass or a 5-day challenge where I'm charging a ticket, then I don't want to make it public, because those folks that paid to get it are going to say, well, why does the public get to hear it for free and I had to pay for it? And so I don't want to make that one public, because that one is just for my private membership. And so what I do on that one, once I upload it into Vimeo, is I make it unlisted. So now here's the difference. Now, we talked a little bit before we started recording today about Canva, where you can make all kinds of graphics. And so I made two different covers. So if I'm doing one for the public that's unlisted, that's totally for the public, free, that they can tap into, has one graphic thumbnail that I then put over the video. If it's for the mastermind or the challenge group that's paid, I put a different graphic over the video. And so now at a glance, I know which ones are private and which ones are public. And so my viewers only get to see the public ones. If they're just scrolling through Vimeo, they can only find the public ones. The ones that I make unlisted or private don't show up. But I can take that link, and now I'm deciding, where do I want to put that for my membership? Where do I want them to find me? Now, I could just send them an email with the Vimeo unlisted link and say, here's your video of today's private call that you paid for. But I wanted it all to be in kind of a platform. And so what I chose to do, because I wanted to include a course with it and a membership site, I chose the platform Teachable. Now, again, I don't get paid. I'm not an affiliate with Teachable. So there's a million and one platforms out there. You could use your website. You could just put the link in your website and send them to your website page. And when they scroll down to that day's replay and click on it, it takes them over to the Vimeo site. And so there's all kinds of places where you can store that particular video as a VIP ticket. So when they join your mastermind, your 5-day challenge, whatever it is that you're putting out there, they can go and find the replay. So it can be on your website. It could be on your computer, which I don't recommend, because that's going to fill up your computer. So I like getting it out onto another platform. You can leave it right on Vimeo and put the link right on your website. You can then leave it on Vimeo for them to tap in. You've got that link. I, again, just put that link over in my Teachable, which is just like putting the link on your website. I'm just using Teachable as my website. Or, and here's another, one last thought, or I do both. You can also upload it into YouTube. And the reason, again, that I didn't use YouTube originally is what I said before, is at the other end of that video, it throws you out to whatever they're interested in, you know. And for me, I always get dance videos or music videos. And so the more I thought about it, though, and Mark asked me, he said, where are you saving these? And I said, on Vimeo. And he said, what happens if they crash for some reason? And I'm like, what? And he goes, if Vimeo goes away, he says, everything you've done is gone. And I said, okay. And he said, you should probably have a backup. So I started uploading into YouTube as my backup. And so over on YouTube, I originally thought, well, this is just going to be a backup. So I'm just going to make them all unlisted because it's just kind of a storage for me, just a backup storage. And then I thought, Kathy, what are you thinking? YouTube is what, the second largest search engine in the world. And so if you're trying to attract folks at the top of that funnel and it's one of your free meetups, why not make it public? Who cares if it dumps them out to their boxing video or whatever it is they like to watch? If it gives you an opportunity to do some additional marketing and it's the free one, okay. The only thing you have to remember is even on your unlisted ones, YouTube will dump them out into their favorite videos at the end of your unlisted ones. And the first time that happened to me, because I didn't quite understand how YouTube worked, I thought, you know, why does this guru have a dance video on his platform? Well, he didn't. It was because he had put the unlisted lesson that he did on YouTube. And at the end, YouTube is what dumped me out into a dance video. It wasn't the person who I bought the video from. So just know I advertise to my tribe with my Vimeo link, but I do put all my free stuff on Vimeo and on YouTube. And then my unlisted stuff I put over on YouTube and make it unlisted just as a backup. So hopefully that's helpful on where to save these once you create them. But Zoom is my recording of choice because it automatically separates out the audio video from just audio only. And so then if you want to have a podcast, you could take all those free ones and guess what? And that's why you'll hear me say oftentimes for those that are listening to this later, you'll hear me say that from time to time, because what I do is I also take the audio version only if it's a free meetup like the one today, and I will also put that out as a podcast. And so it automatically then goes out to another 8 channels. And so that's a way to market. So Mason, we're talking a little bit about the marketing piece of this. And so I think this is going to be very helpful for you as you get started on putting together your program on what it is that you want to share with the world, your message. And Debbie, I know you're working on your message as well. So anyway, that's what I have today on where to save these videos and why I chose what I did. I use Canva to do my graphics for the thumbnails, and I name the free ones and the mastermind ones differently. I put different graphics over those and save them on Vimeo, either public or unlisted. I save them also on YouTube, either public or unlisted. Yes, questions?
I will clarify with you later offline what kind of, like how to make a printed book. I mean, I've done those two journals, but those are low content books, which is different than, and I made that one ebook, which is technically too small for a printed book, but yet when I did it in PDF, it was 29 pages. I need to check the page limit. So I'm not sure if you're referring to those or create a whole new document, which is definitely next step in my process. So.
Well, if it were me, and where I would start is if you're going to do a 5-session masterclass, mastermind challenge of some sort, I would write my program. I would do what are the 5 big points. Now, and the reason that I like that you can kind of adjust this is because that will change as you go through it, because people will have questions that you hadn't thought of and you'll go, oh yeah, I need to put that in there. But I would maybe make an actual book that they could hold in their hand. I would actually maybe make something like a workbook that goes with your 5-day challenge.
I have that. Yes.
So then for 99 cents, see, that's their ticket into, because normally if you're going to do one, you're going to give everybody that joined a free workbook as added value. Well, now for 99 cents, they're going to buy the workbook and that's their ticket into the 5-day challenge.
Yeah, those I've done for the 5-day challenge I'm doing. I have an actual book that I've written, but in getting ready for that challenge, I actually do have quite a few handouts, including a book of power thoughts. That's about 50 pages. It's about 50 pages with illustrations, and it goes back to me learning how to use Canva and produce stuff like that. And it's, I learn by doing. Mm-hmm. Some people are better able to learn by reading. I learn by doing and making mistakes.
Yeah, that's me. Of them. Yeah.
So that's what I've done. So actually, okay, I know what you're talking about now. I have one of those. I had not thought about putting it up as a standalone document for sale. I thought about that just for the mastermind, but I'll take a look at it, see if it can be tweaked for that.
Well, and now, and the guru that I was watching, he actually had written a book on the topic that he was going to do the masterclass on. And he actually had his book out there. He had actually published a full-fledged book on the subject, and he was selling it for 99 cents. And that was their ticket into the 5-day challenge. And then he used the replays and the workbook as his VIP ticket.
Okay.
So that's how he did it. But anyway, it's all different variations, but there's some things to think about as a way to market, to get folks, you know, kind of repurposing your content a little bit, where you're getting it published, you're getting reviews, you're getting some, you know, some exposure there, and it's a ticket to generate members into the mastermind or challenge. And then you've got their attention. They're going to hang out with each other for 5 sessions. They're going to start building those relationships, and they're going to want those replays and that workbook or whatever your VIP is. They're going to want to keep that feeling going even longer.
Got it.
All right. With that, I am going to introduce Debbie. Now, one of the things that we do on this call is not only do we talk about how you can have your first mastermind challenge or masterclass, is we also show you how to facilitate one. And right now we're using the book with John Maxwell's book, Everyone Communicates, Few Connect. And Debbie is going to be our facilitator today and take us through the next series. So Debbie, over to you.
Well, good morning, everybody. Yeah, it's still morning.
Yes.
Today, this month, I made a little goof, but oh well. I actually went, instead of doing chapter 6, I did chapter 4. And there must be a reason why I did chapter 4, because who knows, somebody may need this. And, but I openly admit, which is part of this chapter, I make mistakes and nothing I can do about it. I just laugh about it and go on.
No. I loved it because I was like, well, this is a chapter that we haven't covered before. And I recognized it and I didn't stop you because you had it all prepped and it was very interesting. So yes, absolutely. And again, your audience doesn't know the difference when you're facilitating your own.
No, they don't. No, they don't. And I mean, I could just have done chapter 4 and nobody would have known the difference. But chapter 4 is actually called Connecting Always Requires Energy. And so I'm going to start off with this. Let's do some mind searching. First, I want you to mentally think of 3 or 4 great communicators that you know. Now, okay. And if you need to write them down, that's fine, just for memory's sake. And now I want you to mentally think of what person is the best communicator in a small group. Okay, got it in mind? Now, think of Now think of a few that connect well with others one-to-one. For some people, you know, they can't do one-to-one. You have to be in a group. Okay, so now take those people that you have in mind and add another category. Who are low energy people? Do you have an answer, Kathy?
Well, when I think back in different group settings that I'm in, oftentimes it's the introvert, and it's so hard to distinguish between being an introvert and an extrovert and high or low energy, because an introvert could have very high energy, but they're just an introvert, or they're just shy, and they have so much that they want to say, but they don't, because they're either shy or they're an introvert. So that's a tough one.
It makes you think.
Yeah, I do think that communicating better can be learned. It is a skill set that can be learned once you're aware. And so the best communicators in my circle are the folks that can bring everyone into the conversation, and they can even bring in that introvert. And oftentimes it's just asking the introvert a question. And I always start with something, you know, really simple, to get them to talk so that they can hear their voice and see that, you know, people aren't gonna, run from the room. And once they start talking, you can tell that they kind of open up a little more, and then they start sharing more. So for me, it's the best communicators are the ones that can get everyone else talking, and not talk about themselves, but get everyone else communicating in the room.
Mason's got his picture on, so I don't know if he.
Yeah, he said he had to step away for a moment. So Debbie, okay. How about you? Do you have an example in mind?
I think that Carrie is a great example, mm-hmm. of someone who is not afraid to talk to people now, because before he was. And
now, for those that are listening in, Carrie Oberbrunner is a coach that Debbie and I both, we attend some of his events. And we've learned a lot from Carrie, and he has a whole story about how shy and introverted he was. And now he's up coaching and teaching. So go ahead, Debbie.
Yeah, he does a great job of keeping you listening. You mm-hmm. don't get lost. And probably, I'm not sure about another person, but he's the one that comes to mind first. So, okay. Well, for me, I had one answer. For others, there may be a few. You can be a low key, but still have reserves of energy that are not visible on the surface. I mean, how many times do you talk to someone and all of a sudden you hit a certain point, all of a sudden they just explode with whatever they're thinking. And so it goes along with what you were stating, Kathy. That is why when you want to connect with others, you must be intentional. And in turn, that requires energy. Mm-hmm. I probably used to be a person that didn't talk much, didn't feel as though I had an answer that would connect with others while listening. But some cannot follow through with any energy. I mean, they're just blah. Then some, like I said, can have too much energy, and they're called an extrovert. Again, relating back to what you were stating. So simply be willing to use whatever energy that you must focus on the other person and reach out to them. So to connect, you need to figure out how to move towards them emotionally and relationally. Remember, it's not about you, it's about them. And so often when you get into a group, you have a tendency to, lost my train of thought. That's where I let spam gets in the way. we always need to remember that it's about them. They are the person we are talking to. Do not try to impress them with your success. No, you don't do that. You want people to identify with you. So talk about your failures with them. I opened up with saying, I goofed. I'm doing the wrong chapter, but who cares? I find they will open up about theirs with you because you are having them feel relaxed. You want them to realize that you're not trying to just make something out of yourself. And I always find that when you make a mistake and you openly admit it, it relaxes them to the point where you can start actually laughing together about something. And when that happens, it tends to release the tension in the air. Don't you agree? Mason, do you agree? Did you hear enough? I'm sorry.
Yes, I do, because I have learned that whenever you make a mistake, someone, usually a lot more than that, sees it. So for me, if I own it, then I control it. And let's have fun with it. You know, the majority of things I feel you can laugh at or laugh with, so I can control it. Or if it's something that I'm really, really embarrassed about, you know, guys, I'm really screwed. I'm really uncomfortable right now with that. And I can say that too. Once again, I can control it. But either way I do it, it has happened to every one of us. So by my doing that, they now know they have permission to do the same thing. Either laugh at myself because I fell on the butt in an icy parking lot, or, you know, I really hurt somebody's feelings. And I, you know, I shouldn't have done that. And I really don't want to go back over it, but I was wrong. So depending on whatever the situation is. But by you controlling it, you're actually giving permission and sharing a part of yourself with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's being vulnerable and being authentic.
Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah.
So taking that into consideration, I have met John Maxwell talks about having 5 observations about the energy required to connect and what action you should take to be strategic in using that energy. And I thought this section was just, it makes you stop and think, because you think back to different times when you've been in a group or talking to, you're the main speaker, you're talking to someone. So connecting requires initiative. In other words, go first. And a quote by Malcolm Bain says, if you wait until you can do everything for everyone instead of something for somebody, you'll end up not doing anything for anybody, which to me, that really is a great place to start. How many times do we wait for the other person to take the first step? I mean, really, when you think about it, I'm sure there's a particular incident that comes to mind real fast. So think of this. When you need help with anything, who is the first person you can think of that came to help you first? So, Mason, do you have someone that comes to mind?
You're on mute.
There
you go.
So, I'm not sure exactly what you're, who's the first person to mind when I need some help?
Think of an incident where you needed help. Who was the first person that came to help you?
Came to help me or me ask for help? It depends on the situation. It's hard. That's a hard question to answer. Do I have folks in different categories of my life? Yes.
Well, so I'm really kind of
what we're referring to.
Right. Well, I'm kind of thinking of, say, okay, for you instance, for your you're writing. So you are looking for someone to help you research and then do the work so that you can complete the work, but you need help. And there's steps that follow, but, and then there's someone out there that came to help you because they knew what you needed and that you were, and that you were receptive to them giving you the facts?
Well, Kathy's part of that answer, okay, because Kathy's helped me a lot of stuff. And then the lady I work with, her name is Rhonda. She keeps her stuff private. How she writes, we write different genres, and that's fine. But if I ask her about specific writing questions, writing prompts, talking about written verbal tics, you know, and share funny stories about that, then that's the other person I can go to relate those kind of writing things. You know, for example, observing that in my last story, it was 12,000 pages and I used the word but 98 times. That's a verbal tic. Yeah, Kathy's laughing. That's a verbal tic. It's a mistake in my writing. That's okay. And she told me what hers were. We were laughing about it. So then going back, but being helping to be cognizant of that. So that's something I could talk to on those kinds of things. And she's pointing me to other groups, which I just haven't taken part of, but she's actually shown me other resources that are here for me once I'm ready to step into them. And then Kathy is very helpful on the tech back end side. You know, I don't necessarily go to Kathy and say, hey, Kathy, I'm writing this topic, because I don't know what Kathy that well, to be quite honest. But if I'm like, well, I've got this now, what the heck do I do? Then she is my person I can go to ask those kind of questions. So it, you know, it's always good to have that, but you also have to know who's comfortable, and that's a big word, who's comfortable in which lane you're asking him. You know, mm-hmm. I've noticed that my friend Rhonda is not comfortable, for example, sharing her writing. Okay. I would love to read it. She's a smart lady, but she's not comfortable. Okay, cool. But hey, who do you use? What do you do when you come across this verbal tick? You know, hey, boom, she's all over it. So you have to understand people's comfort levels and respect that.
Yeah. Yeah. Kathy, do you have a person?
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with what Mason is saying too, is that not only is it their comfort level, but it's also their information level. Sometimes, you know, you have a question and you have to go to the person who has that information. Not everybody, you know, that's not their specialty. But to answer your question, Debbie, back over the years, and my mom is gone now, but my mom was always in my corner. And because she was my mom, I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. She kind of knew what I needed before I knew what I needed. And so whenever it was time for me, you know, because I was a single mom, and she would say, well, let me have Jen and you go take care of that. And I would go, oh, okay. And so she was just always there. So yeah. I would have to say the person that comes to my mind for me over the years was my mom. And so it was really hard when I lost her, because I knew I was going to lose that relationship. And again, mm-hmm. it all goes back to relationships, and I was going to lose that relationship I had with her. So, to just finish that thought, I remember reading one time, and this was so appropriate. They said, you know that your role has reversed with your parents when you slam on the brakes on the car and you throw your arm out to catch them instead of them throwing their arm out to catch you.
My mom always did that. It was like instant reflex.
Yeah. And when you do that to your mom, when the roles, you know that the reversal is complete. So I hope that I depended on her, because after a while I knew I could. And I hope that in her final year, she knew she could depend on me.
And I'm sure she did. I mean, just knowing who you are, hands down. But you know who came to mind for me, for you, was Cardiff.
Yes, Cardiff Hall. Yeah.
Yes.
He was the one that helped take you out of the box of doing nails. And he's the start of what brought you to where you are today. I'm sorry, Mason.
Duke.
Yeah.
I met Kathy. I learned about Cardiff. I learned about Carrie and then Cardiff in 2016. Mm-hmm. And then I met Kathy, I believe, through one of Cardiff's sessions. Can't say the word possessive. And then I met Kathy not till summer of 2017. But yeah, Cardiff was the one who helped me start. And between that and Carrie to say, hey, this is actually real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. And again, for those that are listening, Cardiff Hall is an author and a coach. And I'm not sure of what his website is, but I'll look it up just so we can mention it. So Debbie, back to you.
Thank you. So I want to continue on with connecting requires clarity. Be prepared. I mean, how many times do you go into speak to a group of people and you think, you know what? I can wing this. I can do it. No way. And how many times do we do that? So
that ever happens.
So to be prepared and have clarity, there are three main areas. Know yourself, personal preparation. I mean, you need to feel valuable. You need to feel valuable yourself in order to help others feel valuable themselves. And then you also know your audience, people preparation. When you need to understand who you're here, excuse me, you need to know who your audience is. Understand and why were you brought to this the stage? Know the people in your audience. By understanding them, your message, how many times has this happened? It won't get lost in the mud, right? Remember, again, I'm bringing that to you. It's about them, not you. Then the third is know yourself, professional preparation. Know what you're talking about. Again, don't wing it. Bring yourself, being yourself, understanding others will always take you far when connecting with others. Do not go into a group. I'm going to repeat it for again. Don't think you can wing it, because when you do that, your audience will become disengaged. And I find I personally, when I go to a group and I'm listening to someone, I come away with not have learned anything, period. Do you agree, Kathy?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I just ran across a Facebook post, and I don't know if you'll remember this, Debbie, but back in 2009, we were in a networking group together, the WOW Women.
Oh, yeah.
And we met, I can't even tell you the location, but Kathy Duffus was the coach at the time, or was the facilitator of the group at the time. Yes. And she had a business card. And on the back of her business card, she had just a lines. And this goes back to Mason's journal, where things like this is so helpful. On the back of her business card, she just, at the top of it, it said, "What are the five things that I really, really want?" And she had just listed 1 through 5 and then a blank. It was just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 down the side of down the back of the business card and blank, like fill in the answer. And it was on the back of her business card. Anyhow, she passed those around with that question facing up, because again, it wasn't about her. See, she was making it about the group. And she said, "You're not going to turn these in." She goes, you don't have to show them to anybody, but she said, "I want everybody, and don't overthink it." She said, "But just off of the top of your head," she said, "I want you to close your eyes, think of the big picture, what you want your life to look like, and write down the 5 things that you really, really, really want." And so I did that back in 2009. And talk about an impact that connecting really makes with folks. So I did that. And just yesterday, I think, she says, "We never know what kind of an impact or an impression that we've made on people And she said, so just do it. Just get out there and start and make those connections and get your message out there, because you never know what a difference you're going to make. And so I said, Kathy, do you remember back in 2009, you passed out the business card? I said, I actually have a picture of the actual card. And I don't think you guys can see that the picture is there, but you can't read it.
Right.
And nice. Here were my five things. And then I said in my post yesterday, I said, how did I do? The five things I wrote were 100% passive income, to travel more, to invest more, to learn more, and to give back. And I wrote those in February of 2009. 100% passive income, to travel more, to invest more, to learn more, and to give back.
I don't know. Is there another category?
And then I said, how did I do? And Kathy is like, I can't believe it. She said, as a coach, she said, realizing that the part she played in that, just by handing out that card and making that connection, just kind of blew her away. She said, oftentimes when you're a coach or a trainer or a speaker, she said, you don't really get to see the impact that you've had on people's lives.
And usually when you're in a group of people, you don't know who it's going to impact, and you're not striving to, like you're a success story, and you wrote down what was you were thinking. But not everyone can respond to that question and write those things out. And 10 years down the road, for you, it's like what, 13, 14 years mm-hmm. down the road? I mean, you nailed it. It's not a success story for everybody. So you want to at least impact at least, I don't know, just winging the numbers, two people mm-hmm. out of 30. And that's great odds, really. I'm sure you would agree with me. Mason, you're smiling. So what do you
Your
have to add?
The question was an example of why you should be prepared professionally. Short story. Grumpy three-star general, one end of the table. Senior cadet at the academy at the podium getting ready, reaches in, realizes I don't have my note cards and I don't have my briefing memorized. I am sprinting down the hall. Thank goodness they had fallen out. I dropped them right outside the elevator on the same floor. Grabbed them, got back in time. Everything's good. Yeah, because I didn't have it memorized. Everything was on my card. Didn't have it memorized. And this was not a friendly.
General. Oh, no.
Oh, he was grumpy as could be. So, yeah, that is why you should be prepared, at least to a certain extent, because sometimes life happens. You may drop something. You may misplace something. Someone may jumble up your notes. Had that happen. So that's why you should be professionally prepared, to your comfort level. And there's also an example of, now I've also just shared a story, a mistake I made. Done that. It's on two parts. And what did you both do? You both related and you both laughed. And somewhere in the back of your mind, I thought, man, I'm glad I wasn't that guy. So you make that connection. So this is going to your previous point, and also why you should be professionally prepared on that. Because mm-hmm. Everything was on those notes. I remember I was in the elevator. And I pulled them out. I went to put them inside my uniform, and I must have missed the pocket, and it dropped through. And I remember less than 5 minutes before it was supposed to start, I am sprinting down the hallway, hoping, and I got lucky they were right there. So
you had good points in your notes that you needed to share with somebody that day.
Yeah, plus the fact is I was scared beyond belief. I was very nervous and uncomfortable, so... Once again, the better prepared you are, other end of the story. I was a young captain. I was stationed at Castle Air Force Base, which is about 120 miles away from San Francisco. We were having an offsite. I didn't want to spend the night in San Francisco, so I drove in the next morning. This was back in the early 90s. So Word, you had to have the exact right version. There was no, you couldn't go across platforms. I'm in a room full of about 150 people. I've got my data stick. I've got my presentation. Yeah. It doesn't match with the version they had there. I am the main speaker of an all-day conference. I have got this briefing, and there is not a device in that building that it's synced up with. Because back in those days, it didn't, you know. Now, Word is Word is Word. So, but I knew my stuff. So I held up my data stick, and I said, does everybody see this? We're talking colonels and captains, my peers. Does everybody see this? Yes. Good. You've all seen my briefing. Because I can't pull up on a computer. And I put it down, put a big piece of white paper, the kind you flip over, and we did a whole briefing that way.
Oh, my goodness, Mason. Well, were you sweating bullets?
Yes, but I knew my stuff.
Yes.
So it's, do you all see this? Now, have I met the requirement? You see my briefing. Now let's talk. And actually what I found, that actually worked better because I wasn't locked into my slides. So it gave me a little more free form, and it also forced me and the audience to be more participative.
Yeah. Right.
So once again, things you can learn, things you can adapt. When you make mistakes, don't be afraid to share them, but also you've learned from them. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I displayed a certain amount of arrogance by going, see this? Nah, I'm scared inside. It's like, oh, geez. But I mean, I can't drive 3 hours back home to get it, then 3 hours back.
Right.
Stuck. Mm-hmm. You have to improvise. By knowing my material and the stuff I didn't know forced me to ask some of the experts to tweak things out. So examples of why you should know your stuff, but examples how to play with mistakes, have fun with mistakes, because you know most people related to that room. When I did that, most of them were like, oh crap, I can relate to that. So it's all those things combined about creating that connection, creating that communication, you know, having some fun with yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I think also being authentic like that, you know, exactly. on what's really going on, I think your audience, it endears your audience to you a little more as well. Because exactly. instead of them
if laughing at me means endear, yes, they did.
But instead of them saying something like, oh, he, you know, I we don't want to hear him saying, oh man, we're glad we're not in his shoes. And then they start to feel a little bit bad for you. So they're kind of leaning in to try to help you out, you know? Yeah.
And you find that in that case, by not having the drive work, in some people would just sink into the mud. And just, you know, that's it. I'm done. But you laughed. You, by showing the stick and saying, here, you're seeing my speech, whatever. But then you carried on and you brought everybody back to the time that you were there spending with them, and you did it the best you could, and they could care less because they came away with your message in the end.
Right. And the other thing it forced me, I have to interpret it. It's not my message. It forced it. And I didn't plan this, although I'm glad I loved it. It was no longer my message. It was ours because I had to. It forced me to make them participative. I could no longer rely on slides. That's not knowing my style, but we do use slides or things like that as a safety blanket. This is our Linus safety blanket. I didn't have that. So I wish I planned for this, but I didn't. But the reality was it made me force them to come into it. I didn't have a choice. So it actually made the communication have to happen.
Yeah.
And even if it got dead, I'd say, well, what about, and I talked transportation. What do you think about this topic? Because I don't know. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So you ended up turning it into a panel type presentation. Yes.
It was 150 people, so I don't know about the word panel, but it was a very large panel. Well, you know, that there are people in this room who did not like me. There were a couple of folks in there that, there were folks in there that we butted heads professionally all the time, aggressively so. You know, I had my ideas. He had, there's one guy in particular, the transportation management officer. He and I butted heads all the time, fiercely. Like one time in his office, my boss said, "Mason, we're leaving now," and pulled me out because he and I are about to get into it. So I had that level of audience sometimes, but I didn't know this. So you get past yourself, say, "Okay, sir," whatever his name was, mm-hmm. "What about this? I don't know where this goes. How do we handle this piece?" And he didn't like me. I didn't like him, but it forced us to have to work together because in a group, you know, I'm asking for help in a group. I don't know how to do this. How do we get past this? What do you think? You're the transportation officer. So we had to participate, and you know, because he didn't want to look the fool, but he also got into it, and it helped him establish some ownership of it. Mm-hmm. As long as we listened to his ideas, he then now had some ownership of it. So down the road, it was hard for him to say, "You know, Mason, you're an idiot. I'm not going to do this." Well, I may be an idiot, but that was your idea. No, I mean, it works. Yeah. It's a great idea. It was your idea. So I don't care how we feel about each other, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is a great discussion. I'm so glad. I mean, I really appreciate it. But in some of the things that we talked about, it brings me to the next, the third, the third main area. Good thing for my notes. is connecting requires patience. In other words, slow down. Mason, I don't know if you were hurrying that day and you were just in such a hurry, you put it in there not realizing it. So I can understand that. So to me, I'm sure that this is you all agree that it's an impatient world and it's getting worse day by day. And like I said, I'm sure you will agree with that. Or else you're living in a bubble and you don't see what's going on around us. But moving as fast as a person next to you is exhausting. And I'm sure you will agree. But moving slow is not the answer either. You just aren't going to get anywhere if you're moving like a snail. So for me, I find my pace and I have to stick with it or else I will get lost in the fog of the person running past me, like in the tortoise and the hare. The hare said, you know, run fast, run your race fast. And the tortoise just went blah, 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 blah every day. So, and I'm sure that you guys will say that when you find your pace, you're happy. You're a happier person. So next comes number four is connecting requires selflessness. You got to give in. Give. In life, there are people who give and people who take. And these days, there's a lot more taking than anything. Everyone prefers to be around givers. Well, I agree with that. Being a giver can take a lot of energy, but it's usually a win-win. And it energizes you while it helps others. I like this quote that Henry David Thoreau says, "The man who goes alone can start the day. but he who travels with another must wait until the other is ready. And it's frustrating when you have to wait for the person to catch up to you. So, you know, it's just, it's not my thing. And number five is connecting requires stamina. You got to recharge. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, I get up, do my work, do everything that I need to do. And by the time 3 o'clock comes around, I need recharged. And I'll openly admit it, you know, connecting can be very draining. How do you feel after you've gone to a network event and you've talked to everybody that you can imagine? When you leave there, how do you feel? Are you like, wow? Or are you energized because you've met new people and the prospects of growing a relationship with them is to me very energizing. So there was another thing I wanted to share with you. It's another quote that is actually by Lewis Archie Kloss, something like that. The only thing that helps a man going is energy. And what is energy but living life? I love that quote because it touches on so many different aspects of a person's life. And does anybody have any questions?
No, I don't have any questions, but I do know what you're talking about the whole energy thing. I think we have to know who we are personally. And I know that I am somewhat of an introvert. So when I am in a large group or a networking event or anywhere where I'm the speaker or presenter or whatever, I have to kind of tell myself, you know, show up, filled up, as Carrie Oberbrunner would say.
Yeah.
And I do well with that. But like you, Debbie, once that event is over, I need to recharge because I know that about myself. And a cute little story, which is similar. Those of you that are on this call today know that I was a nail tech for almost 25 years. And so as a nail tech, I would sit behind the nail table and I would have a different customer every hour on the hour. And of course, it was up to me to keep the conversation going and to do the service. And of course, then I'm, as I like to say, I held hands with people, you know, 12 hours a day. Because as soon as they would come in, I have to take, and I'm doing their nails. So I'm holding hands. So anyway, Mark and I met, and when my day would be over, Mark would want to talk and hold hands. I would be like, you got to give me a minute. I've been talking and holding hands for 12 hours. And so that was, you know, we laugh about it now, but you know, he was a little offended at first, like, how come I didn't want to hold his hand and talk all about my day. And I'd been talking for 12 hours and holding hands for 12 hours. And I'm like, I just want to sit here for a minute. Yeah. So that's a good example where, you know, we do have to recharge. I mean, I think we have to know our own limits and we have to know, it's that whole self-care piece. We have to know when it's time, you know, to take some time for ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. My one last thought for today is that connecting with others is like anything else in life. You have to be intentional about it. It's just the way it is. To connect, you have to apply yourself and give your very best. Otherwise, you aren't going to succeed. You are going to be just disconnected from everything. And what takes energy, whether you're leading a meeting, having a coffee with a friend, speaking to a large audience, or as I like to say, romancing the stone instead of romancing the spouse, is that you have to think better, a better way to share and expand your energy. Just connecting with people covers all areas in your life. And with that, Kathy, I'm done.
I like it. Debbie, thank you so much. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. Now, let me see. I don't have any of my notes with me because I was supposed to be home by now. And of course, our flight got canceled. And so I'm still in Florida. So I don't have my notes with me. Debbie, this was session number
4.
Okay, that's what I thought. Session number 4. So we have one more session that Debbie is going to facilitate for us, and she's going to tie it all together next month, the 4th Friday of the month at 10 a.m. So join us then for her session. And then we're ready to start again. So Mason, are you ready to, is it a yes for you that you're going to facilitate?
I'm looking forward to it. So yeah. Very good. And my understanding of the goal is I'm actually going to do my mastermind, which will not be John Maxwell books. It'll be based on my book, which is not out yet. The idea we discussed, I'll do mine. It's a 5-session thing. Maybe I can garner some information, and then I want to put mine out this fall.
Very good. I love it. I can't wait. This is going to be exciting. So send me your link of your book so that I can, you know, read ahead a little bit so that I can show up filled up for you.
Well, my book hasn't been published yet.
Okay.
Yeah. I have no problem on a personal level sending you a copy if you want to look through it.
Okay.
Or I said to you, Debbie, the only thing I ask is this, if I do that, and yeah, we're recording, honest feedback. It's nice if you say I've done a good job. Yay. No, I need to hear where I've screwed up. And I legitimately say this to get permission. And I could care less if you say, Mason, this sucks. But I'm just going to ask you why and in what way. No.
No, I get it. We all need beta readers. We talked about that our writers group. We need critiques and beta readers.
But Debbie's left with I'm giving permission for that because I learned that a long time ago. I wanted to do better with my writing. The people I knew were too nice. They were too friendly. Years ago, I was working in a steel mill, so I gave copies of my stories to some of the guys I've worked with. I mean, they're honest. And it's important, like, for example, and here's why I use this over the years. There was one story I've written I really liked, The Great Spider Hunt. I think that story is hilarious, makes me laugh. Of all the people that read it, all of them, they didn't talk among themselves. No one else liked it. It just didn't connect for them. The point being, that was important feedback, you know? And it wasn't, they didn't say, it's like, well, this was stupid. It's like the overall story just didn't work. It just didn't work. And I heard that consistently from all of them. That was important feedback I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. I haven't changed my story. I still like it, but I may someday. But the idea is honest feedback. So when you ask someone to look at stuff, I found it's easier to give permission. No one wants to be the one saying, you know, Kathy, that plant off to your left side looks like crap. No one wants to be that. Well, some people do. Most people don't want to do that. Debbie, your book's off to the right side or out of order. No one wants to, you know, I was like, ooh, that's being mean. I'm giving permission with the caveat, just tell me why. That's how I'm going to learn, you know? So, yeah. But I have no problem. If you two want to look at it and be beta readers, I'm cool with that.
I would love to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, did you say the first story you shared with your coworkers was about a spider?
No. So years ago, this was like 20 years ago, my oldest boy was in like 3rd or 4th grade. And I wrote a story for him called Volcano Head, about a little boy whose head, when he gets mad, it turns into a volcano. And he loved the story. So we put it together. We wrote it in little cardboard, you know, construction paper cover. And he took it to school. And that whole day, I was terrified. What if the kids didn't like it and made fun of him for something I wrote? So I wanted to get better. So I took a pack of 5 stories or 5 short stories, and I gave them to a bunch of guys I worked with in a steel mill. Okay, so there was five stories in there, one of which was the Great Spider Hunt, just to get their feedback. So, and it was funny because I got different feedback, but one of them was that story didn't connect with anybody else. It just connected me. It's literally a story. My son one day went in the bathroom to brush his teeth and there was a big spider in there. This is real life. Big spider. My wife told me I had to kill it. So I made a story based on that. I thought it was funny. I need to obviously, but in those days I was still, I was at the beginning of my writing, beginning of my writing. And it's amazing. I'm a college graduate, but I can't write worth diddly in terms of non-business. I write a great business report. I really, this is not arrogance. I write a very good business report. It will be factual, to the point, dry as the Sahara Desert. Okay? No, it's okay to say that. But I want to write in a way that connects better with other folks to tell a story. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, when I told you I misplaced those note cards, I could have said, yeah, I misplaced my note cards right before a briefing. Who cares? I had this briefing for a very grumpy three-star, and I am running down the hallway in full uniform. See the difference? Uh-huh. There's your difference. Learning to add those details, learning to be comfortable, learning to realize adjectives, they weren't my friends once upon a time. Mm-hmm. So that's all part of, and this ties into connecting with people, writing, which is a way of connecting.
Absolutely.
I totally agree. And you know, you sent me a copy of that poem, the one sheeter, and
I don't know which one we're referring to because I have so many of those things.
I know, and I,
our greatest fear.
Yes.
That's in front of me right now. I have that on my bulletin board right there in front of me.
That was amazing. Just so you know.
It's Our Greatest Fear by Williamson.
All right. So for those of you that are listening, tune in next month, the fourth Friday, 10 a.m. And Debbie is going to facilitate the fifth session. And then stay tuned because starting in June, we're going to hear Mason. I can't wait. I can't wait to see the product, to see the message, and to mastermind it together. So with that, we will see everyone later.
Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it.
Don't hang up, YouTube.